Hold on, stay with us.
We are.
We're in a wine bottle. Oh, there we go. We're fine. That's good. We're good.
I love it when he says we're fine.
It's a euphemism. We're fine. Everything's fine. All right.
Fine.
Fine.
There's two ways to say that, and one involves a P. It's kind of like fine.
Fine.
Says when your wife says it, or your girlfriend says it, right. It is not a good thing.
That's right.
All right, and let's see if I back that thing up. Were we on while I was trying to cue that thing up?
That's why I specifically started. I wanted to hear it. That's why we did.
Oh, is that why you started yelling? Okay, let's make sure I'm on over here. I guess. All right, let's let this go a bar or two. Let's cut a rug with Tommy Dorsey.
The big band era. Can't go wrong with the big band era. You just can't.
Dump, dump.
Bum, bum.
It didn't originally have lyrics, but here on my show the other day, I picked up an album by the Mills Brothers, and they sing a vocal version of this thing. Of course, it's Tommy Dorsey's Opus 1.
I'll tell you what, when those Dorsey brothers got together, the magic happened.
Yeah, it was the relationship, at least as professionally, was kind of in and out.
Yeah, well.
And then they wound up splitting up there later, then another reunion, and they split up again.
I don't know if it was as bad as David Lee Roth and Eddie Van Halen, but it was up there in the annals of... You know, and that is an interesting thing, when these siblings get together, how things can deteriorate or they can actually be fueled. What would you think would be the most successful sibling musical partnership?
The most successful in big bands?
Well, in music.
In music in general.
The Carpenters.
The Carpenters, yeah, absolutely. You know. I think I'm coming across a little loud here. There we go. Working on our balances again, speaking of. Talking about working well together. I have to pull my microphone practically out of the wall in order to get in the camera here. But that's okay. I'm the engineer. I pay no attention to the guy behind the curtain.
That's right. We need some heat here.
Yep. Yeah. Definitely, I would have to think, especially where relationships are involved. You know, like, let's mention some of the great quartets.
Yeah.
You know, from my era, the McGuire sisters. Mm-hmm. You know, they were natural-born sisters. They really were sisters, the Boswells.
Right.
There was the usual interplay between sisters that goes on.
Yeah.
But Steve Allen, jazz pianist Steve Allen, was to remark, did it make a difference that they were related in the harmonies? And apparently it did,
yeah.
At least according to studies that were done on that subject. Why do natural-born sisters or brothers tend to be real close in their harmony and their pairing up, you know, and it's apparently it does make a difference.
It's the same genome. There's a
well,
level
there you are.
Of genes. It's like it's the nature versus nurture argument.
I suppose.
And I think about, you know, who actually did good consistently, who does do good consistently, but I don't know if they play a lot, is the Marsalis clan.
Yeah.
You know, all of those guys get together and they do good work. So,
yeah.
It's.
And sometimes a little fire between brothers or sisters can add to an interesting interesting take, if you will, during the recording session.
Yeah.
Not totally related here, but I caught a story the other day about Frank Sinatra singing That's Life.
Yeah.
Apparently, during the recording session of that, the producer wasn't done with him, Frank Sinatra. And. Well, you know, when Frank was done, he was done.
He was done.
That was just it. Well, the producer had to go back. He didn't like it. So he had to go back out to the car in the parking lot at Capitol Records and get Frank out of the car and say, I'm sorry, we're not done yet.
I bet that went over really well.
Yeah, well, actually, it did not. The take that you hear when Frank is singing that sort of where he bears down on his voice in that song, it sounds like he's mad.
Yeah.
He is.
Oh.
He actually is. He was not pleased to have to come back in and retake that thing. So when you hear at the end.
That's right. He was hot.
He was hot.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And so the producer then when it was over, just I don't know. I'm just surmising here what it was to kind of hack off Frank.
Yeah.
That's good.
That's the first and last time they ever worked together. That was it. That was the end of the relationship.
There were certain, well, I don't know that it was the end of the relationship contractually that had to continue,
right.
But there were certain people that Frank insisted on working for, just to put a positive wang on it here. He had definitely people he didn't want to work with.
Right.
One of them was Nelson Riddle.
Yeah.
And it was actually, it was another producer at Capitol Records that put Nelson Riddle and Frank together. It got to be, they got to be such an item. Somebody in the studio said they thought they were married. You know, not quite that close, but it was a situation where when Frank would step into his studio, and he, if Nelson wasn't there, he would go, where's my orchestra leader?
Right.
Like that.
Yeah. You know, I watched a documentary on Frank on HBO. And he was a fireball, and he needed it his way, and if it wasn't his way, that's why he sang My Way, because that's the way his life worked. He was, and there was, I think there's a lot of people in music that can get away with it, but...
A little closer to the mic.
Oh, yeah. I think there's a lot of people in music that can acquiesce and get into it, but Frank, it absolutely 100% had to be his way, and he was difficult about it. I don't know, and there's a lot of people that say, yeah, that was Frank's way, you know, he made good music, and he may be that case where it's like, all right, the guy did good with the music, do we really care what he did off camera? I don't know, does it really matter?
Well, some people that put out some of the greatest music in the world are the most difficult to get along with. Case in point, Buddy Rich.
Oh, yeah, Buddy. The Buddy tapes on the bus. Bad.
Man, don't cross that guy if he's had a few.
That's right.
I guess he was into martial arts.
Yes.
He was always looking for opportunities to try it out.
He was going to get in there and start it up.
I guess so. Another Frank story. Strangers in the Night.
Yeah.
Big chart hit for him.
Yeah.
Probably one of the few chart hits that went over to the pop charts.
Yeah.
But Frank called the song crap.
Wow.
And I'm not using the actual word that he used. He thought the song stank.
Wow.
It just wasn't his song. He didn't want to sing it, and he thought it was commercial. And you know, here's a guy that was singing, you know, great songs like, you know, with the Gordon Jenkins Orchestra and Nelson Riddle and stuff like, you know, My Way and, you know, that one that won him a, come on, the one that won him several Grammy Awards and Gordon Jenkins, can't think of it. Oh, I was a
Kingston blank.
Yeah, it was a Kingston Trio hit too.
Yeah.
For one of the guys of the Kingston Trio, and he took it. I think it was on the Folk Songs album.
Yeah.
Yeah. You all are probably ahead of me and know. I'm just on a microphone now, and I'm very nervous and afraid. Actually, no.
It's scary in here right now. Somebody needs to send us a bottle of water. We need it right now. We need some holy water.
When I was 17, it was a very good year.
Yeah, that's right. It was. It was a very good year. Yeah. That's the interesting thing about the backdrop with these songs is you would have never thought that, just the way Frank rolled, that it would have been a problem. But he just, that was the kind of dude he was.
Yep.
He just made it sound good when he had to go in the studio. It was like it worked. It's like the things that we don't know about someone like David Letterman. Like how neurotic and how freaked out and how down on himself he was all the time. You would have never known it. He was just that guy.
I think we ran out of album over here.
That was a short sider. We're going way, way too long here.
No, I started at Opus 1.
I gotcha. So the one thing I do want to say before we, you know, kind of segue out of this is we get into our music.
All right. First of all, what's the name of this?
We're on the
Thundering Herd.
Yeah, it is Woody Herman.
Yeah,
the Woodchopper's Ball. It's been so long since I've heard it.
This really is not a very good recording of it. Sounds like it was it's one of these remakes that's kind of phased out.
It sounds like they're in a tunnel.
Yeah.
You guys okay in there? You need some hot chocolate back there.
And I noticed Music of Your Life used to use these a lot, and they finally phased them out, literally. They were simulated stereo. Do you remember those?
Yes, I do.
They were fine for AM, but they tried to put them on FM, and because of the phasing problems, a lot of the echo sort of drowned out the instrumentation, kind of like is what's happening here. It sounds cavernous,
no.
but but the crispness of it is gone.
And that's the reason why you want to do vinyl. So, yeah, they're actually working against themselves here.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, it was a nice try, I guess.
You know, the one thing I do want to say, and I've been wanting to do this for a while when we're doing this, one of the thrills of being in this jazz world is getting the mail and getting the CDs. And I'm going to actually open this up here on the air here so you can see. Let's see who we got here. And I want to give them a little bit of a plug.
Okay.
Ooh. This is the Kevin Sun Trio. Check that out. That's actually a pretty good first open right there. Check it out.
Can the camera even get a focus on that?
Yeah.
You are getting sleepy.
You are getting sleepy.
No, I'm just getting tie-dye.
This is hypnosis.
Yeah, this is Kevin...
Saxophonist and composer Kevin Sons creates challenging but compelling new music on his solo leader debut known as Trio. It's coming out on February 2nd, and I'm always thrilled that Ann sends these over my way. Thank you very much. I play these all the time, and that's the one thing that we were talking about while we were recording the vocals for one of these shows, is marrying this world of 2018 with like the 1940s and 30s and 50s, making sure that we see the real evolution of what we're doing as a jazz organism, so to speak. So it's always nice that they're sending me material. I appreciate it. I love it. Thank you. Keep it coming.
It's one of the things you got to love about jazz. It's what we call organic.
That's right. It's like a cup of coffee.
Really?
Every time. So yeah,
there's some of it you can smell.
That's right. It's like a good air freshener. Hang this from your rearview mirror. Boom.
Yeah.
And get hypnotic. So, one thing I did want to say.
Yes.
One of the most prolific brother duos that has been a complete train wreck has been Oasis with the Gallagher brothers.
Uh-huh.
They didn't work at all. Good music. They thought they were going to be bigger than the Beatles, which they never will or were.
I think they all suffer a little bit, especially the more that are involved from sometimes when they're from the same area. Being related isn't always a good thing.
Right. Yeah.
Blood, Sweat, and Tears, that group, huge in the 1960s, and that fusion of rock and jazz that they were doing. They were kind of contentious there towards the end, and that's kind of what broke them up.
Yep, absolutely. But again, you're talking about that fire that can fuel them, too. If they feel that sibling itch, it may push them further to do better things. I think that's what happened with Oasis. Both those guys have solo projects right now, and I think the band probably was fueled off of that. But at the same time, how many canceled shows did you have because of bruised egos and silly Gen X nonsense? You know, it just happened. It just happened.
What goes behind the scenes probably ought to stay behind
the
scenes.
Behind the scenes.
I know I've done, you've done something on the order of over 500 shows. I'm working on 600 of the shows of my genre.
Yeah.
And I don't like to listen to one of my shows shortly after I have completed it.
Yeah.
Though sometimes I will. I'll put it up for you to hear up the hill. But because the whatever travail or problems that I had is still fresh in my mind.
Yeah.
Okay, absolutely. And I have to get away from that to hear really what the final product is.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
If that makes any sense.
It does. It makes a lot of sense. And I hear a lot of musicians that don't want to listen to their albums.
They're done.
Yeah, they simply won't listen to it. They want to evolve and move on. It was a period in time, and they're ready to go to the next step.
Yeah.
Which I admire. That's fine. That's a part of the creative process, and it's like being an art teacher. You got to admire the fact that everybody has their own way. It's a subjective realm. Go with it. Do what you got
to
do.
Sorry, I didn't mean to turn this down. Begin the beginning.
Begin.
Did you know? You know who wrote this?
Oh man, I did know.
Cole Porter.
That's right, Cole Porter.
It got associated with Artie Shaw because, of course, it was his big hit in the swing era in the late 1930s. But it is a Cole Porter standard.
Interesting.
Cole really reeled him out, and I didn't realize until I started looking at all this stuff and creating a radio show with it how much music that man wrote.
You know, I didn't realize. I interviewed a singer out of Oakland. Her name is Lisa B. It was a very interesting conversation. She's a poet and she's a jazz singer, and she was doing interpretations of Cole. And I guess when he was really roaring in his days, he was a gay man and he hid it. And that was one of the fires that kind of kept him going, but no one knew about it until he died.
Right.
It was a big, big part of his life, and it was that time period. He couldn't come right out and say who he was. It was interesting. I didn't know that.
Yes, sir.
So there's always those little things that you find out about people that you just don't know about. So.
Us theatrical people. And the dark secrets that drive us.
That's right.
Yes.
Right to the edge.
All right.
But with that.
With that.
I think it might be just time to say goodnight.
As we say in my church, are all minds free? All right.
Adios.
Anyway, let's let Cole, Artie, take it on out here. Do the honors. I think we're about the end of the song here.
That's right.
Yowza, and enjoy the music, my friends.
I quit.
Neon Jazz.